Welcome, believers. This is the Lucha Lowdown. I am your host and El Jefe of this podcast, James Kincaid, a.k.a. Bimbo Jimbo. And with me tonight, as always, my loyal co-host, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
Yeah, your list of names gets longer and longer.
I just keep accumulating more and more.
Yeah, you're consolidating. You got to break that down where for a little while you'll have all the names James, Bimbo, Bimbo Jimbo, Kincaid, and then you can eventually go to James Kincaid. You do a Dwayne Johnson type.
Yeah, exactly. That's what. Well, you know what's funny is that Matt Stryker on commentary of the episode that we're going to review gave Pentagon a name that I hadn't heard before. Maybe he said it before and I just had forgotten about it, but it really stuck with me as being like very cool when he called them Five Sides of Violence. And I just think that's an awesome churn of phrase for Pentagon Dark. So I really like that quite a bit. But we are going to be talking about the latest episode of Lucha Underground and discussing what we thought about it. This episode, the 8th of season 4, The Ranks of the Reptiles. Overall thoughts on this one, Jeffrey?
I think you and I are going to slightly disagree on this. I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was like anything that great. And if you break down the episode on paper for me, I'm not going to say that any of it is bad. It's just while I was watching it, I don't know, I wasn't feeling it as much.
It's funny because we texted a little bit this week about, you know, some misgivings that we were having about season 4. I was getting ready for a trip to Las Vegas when this episode was first airing, and I was watching it and I sort of felt like you did that. I was like, yeah, everything's okay, but I wasn't like super invested in it. And I actually didn't finish watching the episode at first, so I went back and rewatched the whole thing, and I had sort of a different perspective, a different take on it. I enjoyed the matches this week quite a bit. I thought it had some good vignette action, a callback that we have been clamoring for, and that I very much so appreciated. And it left me with some questions about going forward with the Reptile Tribe and everything like that. So upon second fully invested attention viewing, I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. And I really liked, and we're going to get into everything, but I really enjoyed the main event. I thought it played out pretty much exactly how it should have. And I think it's, again, one of those things where everybody looked good doing their part within it. But let's jump into the start of the episode. Again, this is Ranks of the Reptiles. The first match we got, continuing on the feud between the Reptile Tribe and Worldwide Underground, we got Daga and PJ Black. This is one where I was first watching. I was really into this both times I watched it. I liked a lot the fact that they changed up the style of match that they could have as opposed to being super high flying. They were doing a lot of chain wrestling, a lot of submission wrestling, some really cool counters in this match, and they were talking about that on commentary. I really enjoyed this match. What'd you think about it?
Yeah, I like the match too. I like both of them a lot, and I liked how they were doing it. I think the idea of doing a bunch of submissions is just a very reptile-themed match to me, because it would be like wrestling a snake, that it sort of like wraps around you and yes, is doing submission holds. For the most part, I thought PJ was the one who's kind of dominating the match anyway, so it was kind of interesting because he's not even the reptile. But what I liked was the way the match ended. You know, you think he's in control of it, but like with a snake, all of a sudden it strikes quickly, and that's how Dago is able to get him. That's the way I interpreted it. And then when they were talking about PJ Black and they were outlining exactly what his role is in the Worldwide Underground, I think the word they were looking for is enforcer. That's yes, how I would describe him.
Yes.
And I completely agree with everything they were saying. I think that's what he is. He's always one of the ambushers. He always has everyone's back for the most part. He's the guy who kind of inflicts pain. And then sort of like this match, you don't necessarily get to go up against Mundo. You're going to go up against one of his guys who's going to break you down.
Yeah, no, I think that's very well said. He is the enforcer of the Worldwide Underground. I thought he showed out brilliantly in this match a lot, you know, showing what he can do in the ring. His arrogance cost him a little bit. I liked that crucifix wrist lock that Daga got him in to win, too. And like you said, it's very thematically appropriate for the Reptile Tribe to do stuff like that. I remember Cobra Moon's debut match, she did a lot of stuff like that as well. So I enjoyed
and
that.
And may have killed a a wild cat or something, right? Wasn't that how her opening match?
Yeah, God, what was his name?
Choked out a panther or something.
I don't even remember that guy's name, but I liked him in the, and I wanted to see him continue on.
Sorry, I was pushing the little toy that you gave me.
What is that?
That's the Bob's Burgers toy you gave me. I didn't realize I pushed the button.
Is that like a year ago or 2 years ago?
Yeah, it's at my desk.
All right.
Sorry about that.
That's all good. Yeah, we haven't seen him since. I'm struggling to come up with his name, but oh well.
It doesn't matter. She killed him.
Yeah.
He's dead.
And if he hadn't been killed by her, he probably would have been sacrificed to the gods by now
anyway.
At this
point, yeah.
Exactly. That's what happened. So Daga picked up what I thought was a pretty big win for him. The one thing I would have liked at this juncture, and
explanation as to what happened with Daga?
At what happened with Daga, and also just more, he doesn't, like, I like that he was doing the submissions, and that's very reptile-like, but other than that, his presence in the reptile tribe, he sticks out like a sore thumb.
Because he's not a reptile.
Yeah, and just like when we last saw him, he was being stalked by Cobra Moon, then we thought he was dead. I would have to this point liked a better explanation for what happened. I don't understand why we haven't gotten one. And again, we were going back and forth about sort of some of our mixed feelings about season four and stuff that Lucha Underground's had to endure. You know, the loss of talent, you know, the people that have left, not that they don't still have a very talented roster, they do, and Daga certainly is a very, very, very talented wrestler.
Yeah, we were happy to see him return. Yeah,
absolutely. But
because we were bummed that he had disappeared.
Yeah, but the other side of that coin is you have to give us a why. And Lucha Underground is so good at giving those, it is terribly vexing that we haven't gotten that yet. And so that's just something I was sort of thinking about through that match is like, you know, I want to know. And I feel like we deserve to know at this point why we haven't gotten that. But after the match, we got Cobra Moon with just a great the battle cry to wake the rest of the snakes and have them come out there and start just beating down on PJ. And again, the rest of the Worldwide Underground, minus Jack Evans, show up and attempt to, you know, battle back the Reptile Tribe with Vibra taking, you know, a lot of punishment before he is forced from the ring. That's when Cobra Moon got on the mic, and I will give her props for her, you know, emphasis on her S's and everything like that to really, you know, sort of make her snakeness pop. But she's now stalking Johnny Mundo. I don't know, maybe it's to become a new king of the Reptile Tribe. I think, you know, as much as I like Daga, I could... Look, if Johnny were going to be in a tribe, he is a snake. You know, he would be in the Reptile Tribe. So it makes sense that Cobra Moon wants to recruit him. So she's challenging Worldwide Underground to an Atomico's match for the right to force Johnny Mundo into the Reptile Tribe. And if Worldwide Underground wins, now we get a little bit more Reptile Tribe lore. The Snake Queen can grant a wish. I don't know if this is like a Dragon Ball or what, but apparently she has that power. What did you think about that post-match exchange?
Yeah, once again, props to anybody doing a snake character who elongates the S's. It's mandatory. I don't know if she has that kind of power, honestly, because how come the Reptile Tribe has never really accomplished anything in Lucha Underground?
In poor leadership, like Cobra Commander.
I guess that's true. Or they're doing much different things than we even know about.
And that's possible. You know,
yeah.
Based on some things
they're
that
they're fighting
see
a
later.
Whole other battle, and yeah, they're acquiring a different like power set or something like that. Who knows? I guess Mundo didn't really have much of a choice because they just keep stalking him anyway. But I don't know if I would have agreed to this. I would have just said, No, that's all right. I don't want to wish, and I don't want to work for you. So let's just part ways.
Yeah, that is the one thing that I did take sort of, not umbrage, but a little bit of it was quizzical that Johnny would even agree to that match. You know? I mean, a wish sounds great and all, but man, the stakes seem pretty high for something I'm not sure that, like you said, that she can even do. But
I have seen no evidence of Cobra Moon's power, honestly.
Yeah. Well, so that's another thing. It would have been nice if we'd sort of maybe gotten like... like a sort of a showing of that in the past too to lead to this. But that being said, Atomico's match, or so would appear, for the rights to Johnny Mundo or Worldwide Underground gets a wish. Reptile Tribe's going to Slamtown either way. That will be I am interested to see where that goes, because I do think that they Worldwide Underground loses and Johnny Mundo becomes the Reptile Tribe. Do you think that's his eventual fate as well?
Well, yeah, because otherwise, what would have been the point of this feud?
I'm confused. What is the point of this?
I mean, we would just end up exactly where we were before this started. So I feel like there has to at least be some sort of arc where Mundo is in the Reptile Tribe, escapes the Reptile Tribe. I don't know.
Yeah, and we still haven't gotten any follow-up with Drago and what his deal is. So there's a lot of mileage left to go with, sort of explaining what's going on with the Reptile Tribe at any rate.
Well, with a vignette later, at least it shows that Drago is still sort of in the same place that he was in, that he is a slave to the Reptile Tribe. The only
Yes.
difference is now he's sort of a cold slave. You know, there's no
Yeah.
bite back or anything from him.
Yeah.
I'll accept that. It's at least something to me, because it just seemed like he was all of a sudden a part of the team, which was very strange. I like them parading him out in chains, but I mean, I can do without that if it's just not practical all the time.
I like the chains too, but I mean it's
Because I'm
probably
just thinking of like a dragon on in chains, you know, and them like bringing him to the ring and making him fight. I use my imagination while I watch this show, and so I don't see a human performer in a costume. I see an actual dragon just flying around in the ring fighting a man of a thousand deaths or something like that, you know? So, or some sort of space wizard.
Well, and that brings up too, again, we're talking about the fact that so far in season four, we've only gotten whispers about where Aerostar is and what he's doing. Phoenix is in a casket, so a lot of our, Dante
Sort of would
Fox,
appear.
yeah, Sora would appear. Dante Fox has gone AWOL, and Helico ostensibly has been killed by Ricky Mundo,
We don't know that
and.
he was killed. We don't know what happened.
Yeah,
We just
well,
know that Ricky Mundo did something to him.
did something that was not good. And so there's a lot of key players that we haven't gotten to see. And I'm starting to think that like is Famous B even going to be back at all this season, or is he just gone?
Recuperating.
Yeah, I don't know, because they're
At least
talking
his
about.
leg is saved. That's what really matters.
Yeah, it's just so there's been an adjustment period through this season of Lucha Underground, stuff like that,
It's
and
a
a
lot
lot.
of growing pains. It's a
Yeah,
very weird transition.
and
I
a
also, I'll give Ricky Mundo props as well. When he came into the ring, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. You distract the man until Mundo can, or Johnny Mundo can come in and do some damage.
he did.
So, I mean, that's what the intern does.
He still got the fanboy left in him, that's for sure. So after.
He's still playing his role for the most part. He's just got to get away from that doll.
Yeah, he does. I don't think he's going to though. After the post-match stuff with the Reptile Tribe Worldwide Underground, we got maybe my favorite part of the episode, and it's something that Jeff, you and I have been talking about, whatever
Even this
happened.
season, we've been talking about it.
Yeah. And so we got Katrina showing up to the locker room to talk to the Mac. I like this on a few different levels. One, Mac's response saying that somebody should put a bell on you or something. One, that's a terrific line. Two, it shows that Katrina still maintains sort of some of her stealth powers, which is great. And she says that she has bad tidings for the Mac. And Mac's response again about how what like Mill like dropping me on my head last week or a couple weeks ago wasn't enough of a warning. I again, so Katrina is weaving her sort of warning to the Mac that, Mil Muertes is coming for him and death surrounds him, and it surrounded his cousin too. And she sort of does the Fonzie and pops open the locker next to the Mac's. And what do we see but the skull of Big Rick with cigar and eye patch still on? And the Mac, of course, freaks out about it and everything like that. I thought that was tremendous. I popped big time for that. I thought that was so cool. I'm sad that Big Rick is dead and that he won't be coming back, but at least they gave us some closure there. And I think actually, maybe in the Lucha Underground comic book, I think it might have been Katrina that killed Big Rick anyway, but I don't remember exactly. But what did you think about this?
Yeah, I loved it. I like that they continued to mention that the Mac was even his cousin. It's
Yeah.
important to keep those storylines consistent. And if we were never going to get Big Rick again, I like the idea of utilizing the characters. So being able to show what happened to him and to be able to talk about him. I mean, he still exists in that universe, even if we're never going to see him perform. And I mean, obviously now we're definitely not.
Yeah, Big Rick is dead. So my question for you, Jeff, is this, did death come for Big Rick, just a long time ago, and Katrina's just now showing off, or because of Mac's actions of eliminating Mil Muertes from the Gift of the Gods match, is that what sealed Big Rick's fate?
Fair enough, but I believe the Lucha Underground comic books are canon. So if you did say that Big Rick
I'm not
was.
sure. I don't remember exactly,
If
but
that
yes.
happened, then it may have happened a while ago. I would still say that he probably died a while ago, and that's why we haven't seen him. That would be the explanation to it. I don't think it has to do with Mac and Mil Muertes in their most recent feud.
I
If
would
anything, I
prefer
mean,
that,
Mil
though.
Muertes is pretty direct. I think he just goes after the guy that made him mad.
Well, but Katrina is more Machiavellian. I actually would
Yeah,
like
but
it
I mean, is
better.
Katrina really even. Does she even care if somebody goes after Mil Muertes? They've got a whole weird thing going
They
on,
have a
too.
very weird relationship
Yeah,
going
because,
on,
okay, well, in that case, then
because
how come no.
like Mills made
Well, how
his
come nothing's
feelings
ever
like.
happened to Melissa Santos, though, with the whole Phoenix feud?
That's
Because
true.
that would be much more
That's true.
impactful.
Mills made his feelings very known, and Katrina sort of takes a step forward and then two steps back. I actually would have liked if it was based on the fact that Mac eliminated him. Just for the fact that, like, we're gonna make you pay in more than just a match. Like, we're gonna like hurt your family and stuff like that. So,
I think you could choose to believe it however you want, because I'm
yeah.
sure they're never going to explain it.
Well, you never know. You never know.
Yeah, it's true. A couple seasons from now, all of a sudden there will be a whole backstory to it.
It's true.
That's how it is with the Underground.
It's true. The next thing we got was Dragon Azteca Jr. talking about winning the Gift of the Gods championship. And, cutting an emotional promo about how it was such a big moment, but then he also says that he is going to cash it in at Ultima Lucha Quattro, so he is not making a mad dash to cash it in. Probably a titanic mistake on his part. Cash it in, win the championship, and then you can go into Ultima Lucha Quattro as the champion in the main event, but that's not what he's doing. What did you think about this?
I liked it, and I'll tell you why, for a couple of reasons. I think, well, I mean, he'll definitely lose the belt at some point before that, but I also think he'll get it back, and that will be the match. It also makes me think that he has a much better chance of actually beating Pentagon Dark now, because if he were to face him in a week or two,
Yes.
we're not done yet with Pentagon Dark's championship run.
No.
I mean, there's just more left in that story. But if they were to go up against each other in the season finale and with the history that the two of them have, and that he's a legitimate contender, and we do kind of want to build him up as one of the big heroes of the story, I
Almost
think it
like the
does
new
make sense
Puma.
that he would become champ. Yeah, exactly. We're looking for that new Puma. It can never be Pentagon because that's not his personality.
Correct. No, I agree with you, and I like it for another reason, and it's something
Oh,
we've talked about. Oh, go
I
ahead.
was going to say, yeah. Oh, the other reason I liked it is. I think this is probably what they should have done with the Gift of the Gods championship to begin with. That you don't, I mean, obviously you can't cash it in whenever you want, and I did love that line, but you can only take that belt to Ultima Lucha, and that's how you get the championship
Yeah.
match. I think it would have been kind of cool if then throughout the entire season, they would have the medallions kind of just like passing hands and stuff like that, and people collecting them and everything. And then you have the big showdown, and then somebody wins the championship, and then they turn in the belt to face the champion at Ultima Lucha. That's how I would have liked it. This is fine also. It's just I love the idea of the medallions changing hands, and you don't know who's doing what with it. Because just because that's what he wants to do with the belt, if somebody beats him in a couple weeks, it's going to be kind of weird if they don't cash it in right away, which
Yeah.
I don't think will be the case. And there's no way the medallions are going to spread out again like Dragon Balls and then be recollected in time.
Well, don't be so sure because they collected him pretty quickly.
Yeah, but they don't show up right away. It's kind of like the Dragon Balls too,
It
where you
is
have to
true.
wait around a year until they even manifest again. They're just plain coins, and then in a year's time they turn into the Aztec medallions again.
That is true. I like the comparison, but like you, I like Azteca's choice to do this because it's again something that we've discussed often on the podcast is that now it gives Lucha Underground a secondary championship to be defended. And that's big to me, because I think it's nice to have sort of like that second tier championship, like an Intercontinental title. And it's a cool looking belt.
It's a cool looking belt, and also the belt serves a purpose. Nothing against the Intercontinental belt. I love the Intercontinental belt, and all of my favorite wrestlers have been Intercontinental champions. But the whole purpose of the Gift of the Gods belt is it will give you the title shot for the actual championship.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is really what you're working towards. Because if you're Intercontinental champion, you're almost in limbo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because very rarely are they going to have you go against the champion. You're just sort of this second-tier champion.
Yeah. I do really like your idea, though, about the fact that maybe just during the course of the whole season, these medallions keep changing hands. You know, it's just a power struggle. Hell, maybe somebody can get their hands on two medallions at one point and then leave.
I was thinking about that too. Maybe you kind of are collecting them on your own, even. But then also at the same time, I do like the idea of each tribe being represented.
Yeah,
a Gift of the Gods match or something like that.
Well, maybe in that case, you have to give the medallion to somebody else, and like some heel like Chavo would be like, all right, well, I'm giving the second medallion to like Masquerita Sagrada or something like that, you know, to increase your odds.
Yeah, that's a good point. Where at the same time, the Worldwide Underground would collect four of them or five of them at this point if they could and keep them with each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I like that idea a lot. That would be a cool thing. And like the medallions on their own are cool. Like, you know, Matt Stryker talking about how they have like, you know, magical powers. Maybe they grant immortality and stuff.
That's why I would like the medallions, each one to sort of be emphasized on its own. And if we're doing the comic book tie-in, perhaps if you possess a certain medallion, it gives you certain animal traits or whatever of that animal, you know, like certain powers like that. That's what I'm thinking. You know, that's different though. That's just more of the lore behind it.
Completely agree.
Yeah, it would be fun.
Yeah,
it would be like those medallions on Jackie Chan Adventures. I don't know if you ever watched that show.
I never
but
did.
But the rabbit one made you fast.
Yeah,
and that's how it should be.
I completely concur. And so, I mean, look, I'm always going to be down for more lucha lore, and the medallions are some of the things that you get the best. I loved in Azteca's speech talking about how the Eagle Tribe is one of the most legendary tribes of the seven, and that's
soaring
just
high.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think the Jaguar Tribe, personally.
Well, he didn't say the most. He said one of. So yeah.
Well, and I won't dispute that, but I mean, there's also what, only seven of them. I figure they all are bringing something to the table.
Well, and like the reptiles are clearly like Slytherin. They've clearly always been bad and stuff like that. But
oh, what, the Death Tribe isn't?
Yeah, well, them too, you know, they have multiple bad ones.
Yeah.
But so I really like that. Before we get into the rest of the episode, I just want to remind all you believers, thank you very much for listening and supporting the podcast. We really appreciate it. If you want to support it even more, be sure to hit that subscribe button on iTunes and Audio Boom, and please write and review us, and just let everybody know. Tell your friends. Word of mouth is the best way to get more listeners for this podcast. You guys have been doing a great job of that. And interact with us on social media. You can email us, luchalowdown@gmail.com. You can hit me up on Twitter at James Kincaid or at Lucha Lowdown, but try at James Kincaid first. That's the one that I'm on more so. And also, we are a spinoff podcast of The Best Damn Nerd Show, which Jeff and I and others have been doing for the better part of a decade. So please check out The Best Damn Nerd Show as well, and all their great content, like Ultra Monthly, which is another great show that we do there. And so we've got all kinds of content for all you believers and nerds out there, and we just really appreciate you. So thanks again, and now on with the rest of the show. So that takes us to a Trios Championship match, and I think this is another reason why I like this episode, because this felt like an episode where the creators of Lucha Underground were really listening to us, you know, even though I know this was already shot, but it's stuff that we were theorizing, I think, just last episode as far as who should take the Trios Championships. So we get Killshot, the Mac, and Son of Havoc taking on the Rabbit Tribe. And if I were in Vegas betting on this, I'd be like, oh, well, the Rabbit Tribe has taken this one. And they swerved me.
The Rabbit Tribe is due.
The Rabbit Tribe's losing woes continued in this match. However, I really, really liked the match, and I really enjoyed Killshot's contributions in it. I liked on commentary, Matt Stryker really put over as like, wow, Killshot's really carrying the offense for their team right now. So Killshot, who has been a major jerk and very heelish in this trio's team, but he was really bringing it, bringing the goods for the team and taking it almost single-handedly to the Rabbit Tribe. That led to, you know, the Mac being able to get the stunner and then the splash, but Killshot tagging himself in so he could get the pin. And in my opinion, yes, a douche move, but he did do most of the heavy lifting, so I kind of get it. What did you think about the match?
This was my favorite match of the night, actually. And then when you think about the story, I guess it does make sense that they're the ones who won, because we're not really done yet telling the story of Killshot falling out with them. Killshot definitely won this match. He did almost everything. And even though, yeah, it was a punk move what he did as far as tagging himself in, Son of Havoc tagged himself in against Killshot at one point when Killshot was in the middle of a fight.
Yeah, and I found that very perplexing, too. Like, why poke the bear? Like, why
Son of Havoc, he already doesn't like you, Son of Havoc. He already doesn't. All right? You didn't earn the titles with them.
Yeah, it's like
what are you doing, man? At least Killshot was bringing it for the team. He was doing it in a very heelish manner, though.
He was.
A lot of, look at me, putting the team on my back.
Yeah, you know, hold my
all
dude.
About me. All glory to me.
Son of Havoc, though, like, came into Killshot's house, didn't take his shoes off, and then put his feet up on the coffee table. It's like, what are you doing, man? Like, you see all the shoes at the front by the living room? It's a no-shoe household. Oh, but, yeah, that was...
And then his rotund wife, the Mac, said, nah, it's all right, in front of him.
Yeah, undermining his authority.
Never counter my orders in front of mixed company.
Has to be a united front. But yeah, so this story must continue. They are going to have to implode at some point, obviously.
Very shortly.
Yeah, I really, really thought it was going to happen here, though.
This is not a functional team. Actually, it's not even a team. They weren't fighting as a tag team. It was just Killshot. Everybody was just doing their own thing. They just happened to have three belts to pass out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and then at the very end,
yeah,
so Killshot.
The belt in the Mac's chest, and he just throws one. I thought he was going to drop it on the Mac.
Me too!
That's what I thought he was going to do.
I think that's what he should have done. But yeah, so.
Here's your punk-ass belt.
Yeah, punk-ass bobby pin. Taking
you knew
all
exactly
three.
What I was referring
to. Oh, absolutely. For. And clearly a big Tower Heist fan.
That's canon.
Yeah, but Killshot, you know, again, I feel very vindicated and validated that he was, in fact, the heel in the Dante Fox storyline. But he's really fun to watch, and this was no
exception. He's a phenomenal talent. We loved him last year. He had so many key matches. He's really come into his own since he first came into the temple.
He really has. And so this is a
he's
great storyline.
One of my favorites to watch.
Great storyline, and I mean, I don't know who he's going to end up feuding with more, the Mac or Son of Havoc.
It's got to be Son of Havoc, just because the Mac has his thing going with Mil Muertes, too.
Yeah, I just don't know when that's going to play out. It would be great if somehow, you know, Dante Fox then came back, and it was. I know they don't usually do traditional two-on-two tags, but, I mean, that'd be fine.
We almost
that.
Saw that tonight.
Yeah, nearly. So yeah, that is what the main event for this evening was a tag team match, Cage and a mystery partner versus Pentagon Dark. Oh, excuse me, Lucha Underground champion Pentagon Dark and a mystery partner. Cage came out first and announced that his pick was King Cuerno, and I immediately
Excellent.
Was like, yeah, dude, great pick. Like, tall order for Pentagon to find a partner that can sort of match that star power. Cage and King Cuerno?
And it matches what we were talking about, that King Cuerno is sort of this Boba Fett bounty hunter, assassin for hire type guy. You need a tough guy in your corner, you can get King Cuerno. Also, the two of them were a part of that trios tournament back in season one. They were like the team to beat.
They were the super team.
It was
team.
What, the two of them and was it Tejano? I don't even remember who the third person was, but they were clearly like the favorites in the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what I also liked is King Cuerno coming out with the deer head dress again. He's got the.
Well,
he's
he
got
is a member of the deer tribe.
The deer tribe, as it would be. But look, it's not the name I would want either. But the deer headdress is cool.
No, deer headdress plays.
Yeah.
Okay, we've been fans of the deer headdress since season one. Absolutely.
We miss the pants, but the return of the head.
I do miss the pants. I think the pants make the outfit. I think pants make the man.
The pants make the man. As they always say.
This is what they were talking about.
Yeah, I guess. I guess so.
But it's just, you know what? I'm not gonna look a gift deer in the mouth. It's just I'm happy to have King Cuerno back in the temple.
And it was
sad and lonely without him.
And a focal point too. Like,
yeah, he came back with a vengeance.
Yeah, this is a big season for King Cuerno, which I am happy to see.
He's been in most of the episodes.
Yeah, which is great because he is one of my favorite people just to watch work. Because again, he is so smooth in there. It seems like he never really, you know, messes up a move and everything, which in Lucha Libre, it's hard to hit all those
like
flips and stuff
impossible.
Exactly on point and everything like that. And King Cuerno is just, he's surgical in there, which fits his character so well too, because he's a hunter. I never miss. So
his fighting style matches his personality. And then, yeah, he's so great in the vignettes too. There's no time you don't want to see King Cuerno.
Yeah, I completely agree. So then Pentagon Dark came out, and my thinking was...
Typical Pentagon Dark fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. So my thinking was, I was like, okay, like, who's the one guy that you could partner with to sort of combat that kind of star power? I was like,
Vampiro.
You got to pick. Well, I thought Vampiro could have been a pick. You know, that was sort of outside shot, but I was hoping
he
Mil
takes
Muertes...
Off his lucha letterman jacket.
Yes.
That he's got going on.
I was hoping he'd pick Mil Muertes. Because that would
but
be...
they hate each other.
I know, and that's why it could never happen. But, I mean...
Like, that's the... I mean, this ended up being exactly how it was, because Pentagon has no friends. But I was wondering, because I was looking forward to it, because I like the idea of just a classic two-on-two tag team match as well. You know, just to change things up a little bit in the temple.
Yeah.
And it would be kind of fun to see, it's like, well, who would Pentagon seek out to help him?
Yeah, well, he doesn't have anybody.
He doesn't play nice with others. That's the problem.
He doesn't.
Honestly,
even
the
Vampiro
only
doesn't.
It potentially could have been was Prince Puma. That's the closest relationship he has.
That's true. They've won a tag match
as
together.
Sad as that is.
They've won a tag team match together, if memory serves
Prince
correctly.
Prince Puma's his best friend.
Yeah. Oh, how sad.
Exactly. It's the saddest thing I've ever heard. How marvelous.
Well, no, he didn't have a Count Rugen to call upon, but Pentagon Dark came out there, cut a promo saying that he could do this all on his own, which is perfect for him. It shows just the confidence that he has as Lucha Underground champion, and also I wasn't certain that he wasn't going to win this match. I actually thought he was going to. And I was like, man.
I was furious because I was certain he was going to win this match. I was like, no, hell no.
I knew
this is like
you'd
when
be
you're
angry.
Playing toys with your brother or something. And he does, like, when you're playing wrestling toys with your brother and he does something absurd with one character, and it's like, you can't do that. You can't just kick everybody's ass in the ring. And I was like, against Cage and King Cuerno, which is a serious team up no matter what.
Two top tier guys. And
you're going to have Pentagon Dark. Oh, it's the Pentagon Dark season. And just start annihilating guys. I was ready to flip out.
I knew you would be too. And because I know, again, you still blame Pentagon Dark irrationally. But look, I get it. For why Prince Puma isn't in the season. I understand that you look at him and you see your love, Prince Puma.
If I could get Vince McMahon or Triple H in the temple, I would boo them harder, okay? But I can't. So I blame...
I know, you can't punch what you can't see. I get it. I blame The Undertaker for why Shawn Michaels no longer wrestles, even though that was his choice. I understand the psychology.
Well, you can't blame Shawn.
Exactly. I would never do that. Shawn's perfect in my eyes. So I get what, and I knew immediately, because my mind is a lifelong wrestling fan. I was like, this is the season of Pentagon Dark. They've been really putting him over strong. We've talked about how, like, sort of you've sort of rebuffed that a little bit. And I was like, man, Jeff is not going to be a fan of this because Cage is your other guy.
Yeah,
so
I love,
like,
Cage.
He's going to be
like
Cage
King
and
Cuerno a lot.
Yeah, and I love King Cuerno too. I was like, you're going to be Cage and another top tier lucha guy. I was like, dude, Jeff is going to be furious. To my surprise,
why don't you just throw Johnny Mundo in the match as well? Yeah. And we just have Pentagon line them all up. Then we have Pentagon do the Goomba stomp on all three of them.
So this played out much to my delight, sort of swerving my mind. I thought it was a really fun, good match. I thought Pentagon got in a lot of good. I thought Pentagon looked badass. Like he wanted to do this on his own. It was a tall order. It was overconfident of him, and it cost him. But he still looked like $1 million, like in trying this impossible task of beating these two great luchadors. And I thought Cage and Cuerno both played their parts magnificently. I love that when Cuerno hit the thrill of the hunt, and then Cage is like, "All right, we're good. I'm going to finish him off now." And Cuerno is just like, "All right, peace out. I did what I came to do, just the hired gun kind of thing." I thought
Exactly. It's a job, nothing personal.
this played out about as well as a handicap match in pro wrestling can play out, because a lot of times the reason why I thought Pentagon was going to win, because you'd have to check the numbers, but against top tier superstars, usually the top tier superstar that's in the handicap match wins because reasons in pro wrestling that have I've it's always bothered me. It bothered me like when Undertaker beat Big Show and A-Train at WrestleMania 19. It like I just there's time and time again so many moments where it's like that doesn't make any sense to me. And Pentagon's my favorite guy in Lucha Underground. I was like, he's really like sort of stepping in this one here. He's got to lose this to sort of keep this feud with Cage going, but I thought they did it well, where Pentagon didn't really lose much face. The overconfidence factor obviously cost him, as it should. But it furthers this feud great, because then Cage gets the three count and gives him two concertos after the match. I immediately I was like, this feud with Cage is awesome, and I'm really, really invested in it, and I'm excited to see where it goes next. What did you think about the whole thing?
Yeah, I think it turned out exactly how I was supposed to. And then what I really enjoyed about this match is basically, the whole ending sequence. So him waving off King Cuerno and then Cage winning and then basically, piling on Pentagon, if you will. I like the audience's reaction, because even though Cage is still very popular and was getting plenty of cheers throughout the match at various times, he's getting booed, which is what he's supposed to be getting. And it's his build and his look. The guy should be a heel. I mean, that's just how it is,
Yeah, it's
because
hard
it
for him to
always
be an
looks like he has
underdog.
the advantage. So, yeah. And against someone like Pentagon, I think it's really perfect. I like how they're doing it. They're not burning themselves out. The matches are unique and interesting. And then, because of what happened here, it's not like Pentagon is always getting one up, or it's not like Cage would always be annihilating him, and then Pentagon's going to, when the chips are on the line, that's when all of a sudden Pentagon's going to win. It's like they're not doing it that way. It really is going back and forth. It's a feud. It's a legitimate feud, and the two of them are facing off against each other nicely. And they're two of their better big superstars. It's important that they're both in this match. I like it. And I like we were talking about, I forget if it was just during the episode or even beforehand, this is how King Cuerno should be used a lot of the time too, where he is the hired gun. I like that idea of him being like that. And even though he does represent one of the tribes, I do like the idea that he's sort of just on his own as well.
Very
With
well
no
said.
allegiance. Yeah.
Yeah, very, very well said. And I'm interested to see what kind of match Cage and Pentagon have next. It's got to be building towards some type of crazy stipulation, be it a ladder match or some type of hardcore match.
That's
Perhaps
the
a
only way this
Cerro,
can end. Yeah.
perhaps a Cerro Miedo match, which we haven't gotten. So that would be cool, which is just a glorified hardcore match, but bring back
Yep.
those like light tubes, and just
Oh
start
God.
bloodying one another. I mean, Cage in that triple threat at Ultima Lucha Trace was, they stick like the pins in his head and everything like that. Just So we know he can get hardcore with the
And
best
yeah,
of
didn't
them.
he smash the Max head through a cinder block and
Yeah,
then Max
I
returned the
thought.
favor in a later match or something like that? So yeah, Cage is no stranger to it.
Yeah, I thought we were gonna get something like that with the chairs too. I didn't think he was gonna go for the concerto at first. I thought he was gonna do that curb stomp variation into the chair.
That's what I thought he was going to do also. That's so weird. And then I was thinking, I was like, what he really should do is break this guy's arms, because that's what Pentagon deserves. But
Break his spirit. Look, when are you gonna forgive him?
never.
Damn it.
I'll forgive him when Puma returns to the temple to save the day, and then says that he forgives Pentagon during the series finale.
Well, Puma's killing it in WWE right now, so it's
I
not
know, and
looking
I'm very
likely.
proud of him. I mean, that's why it's like I can't even be that upset that he's not in Lucha Underground, because he's moved on to really big things, and I'm excited for his career.
Absolutely. And we wish Ricochet, Puma, whatever you want to call him, nothing but the best. But it is he is one of the main ones in WWE that I root for because of Lucha Underground and because I want to see him just have all the success in the world. I want him to defy the people that think he's just some sort of indie flip star and everything like that. So his success is, it always makes me very happy. But I think what we can take from this, Jeff, is that I've talked you into this being a pretty damn good episode of Lucha Underground.
Well, like I said, when you break it down, well, okay.
We still have one last thing to talk about, though.
We have one last vignette, which I loved and was embarrassed by at the same time. So.
I understand. I understand completely. So, yeah, that wasn't it. We got one more vignette, which was...
I was going to say, this is where it seems like the writers are listening to us, because we were just asking about this location.
That was... Yeah, that was another one, too. Absolutely. That it was like... you know, we wanted to see the Golden Throne of the Reptile Tribe again, the whole Serpentor deal, and that's exactly what we got. We got Indiana Mundo and Taya going down to the pit. They're asps, very dangerous. going down and you
I guess
go
PJ
first.
Black said you go first.
Yeah. So we got them infiltrating the Reptile Tribe's lair, and I guess they wanted to, you know, sort of like get an advantage for next week's Atomico's match. And they stumbled upon Drago in chains, which you talked about before. And so I do like that, again, that he is still very much so, like, he's a part of it, but not by choice. And he's just sort of losing his humanity, though, within it. And then they stumbled upon Vibra. You don't know how you can miss that guy, the Luchasaurus, as he is affectionately called by the believers. But before we get into what happened, because there's much speculation online about this, did you notice the coffin, Jeff?
Yes, I did.
And people are saying that looks like it's Phoenix's coffin from Three Way to the Grave. So people are theorizing that Cobra Moon might be planning to resurrect him. My thoughts are maybe Melissa Santos, some type of trade for granting a wish, perhaps gives her the amulet to bring Phoenix back. I don't know, but something's going on with that coffin. I was thinking maybe Vibra would be brought back or something. I'm not sure. Maybe that's what we get in the Atomico's match next week. What's going on with the coffin, do you think?
Oh, man, I didn't even think about that being Phoenix's coffin. I was just thinking, I don't know, it's an old temple. Maybe that's where Pindar had been. But, you know, it's like,
yeah.
I didn't know that there was necessarily significance behind it. Oh, man, I don't know how I feel about it potentially being Phoenix's coffin.
Well, Katrina's not going to bring him back.
Well, absolutely not.
So if she can grant a wish.
I think she has the ability to do it. Honestly,
if Cobra Moon can grant a wish to Melissa Santos in exchange for that powerful piece of antiquity.
How the hell did Cobra Moon get all these powers? My God, it really is like Masters of the Universe, where all of a sudden it's like the most powerful army nobody even knew about, and then they just show up out of nowhere, and it's a bunch of snake men.
Maybe, maybe it's a monkey paw wish though.
It's like
so
more
Phoenix...
powerful than Skeletor and Hordak, and you guys just show up.
Maybe Phoenix comes back and he's like, again, it's like the Pet Cemetery thing. Sometimes dead is better. We get a dark Phoenix and, you know, it's not the same. It's not the same guy.
Well, I don't know how I feel about that. Then we
eventually
stack a junior basket.
No. But then eventually love triumphs and Melissa Santos brings him back to the good side. That's, you know, it's the classic story.
Oh, I love it.
It's, you know, it writes itself. It's going to happen. Let's
kind of does write itself. Writes itself in a very cliched manner, but yes,
hey,
it writes
you know what? That's
itself.
Okay. Hey, you know what? I'll take it. But
hey, man, it's professional wrestling. What do we care? You know, it's all fun.
Yeah, exactly. So the rest of this vignette, though.
Well, all right. Ahead. Yeah, let's go through the vignette, and then I have a question. But yeah, okay. let's go into it.
So Vibra starts beating down
Vibra
immediately.
Vibra gets the drop on them.
Yeah, somehow, even though the man is a giant.
Yeah, he has no
like,
points left for stealth. We put
and
it all in strength.
According to them, they were looking for him. So, and he still got the drop of him. So, you know, Mundo and Taya, not the best at infiltrating, but they're getting the crap kicked out of him. Taya gets back to her feet, though, and takes the bat, I think, to his little luchas and then to his head. And they decide to, they get Daga's sword. And,
Is that just lying around?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, it's their house, I guess. They weren't expecting anybody to show up.
Well, that is the same sword that they used to kill Pindar. And Taya does the honors and cuts the head off of Vibra. And so Vibra is assumed dead. I'm not sure that guy's not just going to grow his head back, though, and show up again. I don't.
And he'll wrestle with two heads.
Yeah, maybe.
Or three, even.
I don't. Yeah, exactly. No, it's like the Hydra. But I don't get it, because we spent this time building him up just to kill him off in this way. I was confused by that. Jeff, you
also,
said
the Reptile Tribe is so weak then.
Yes, because he's their heaviest, most impressive hitter.
Yeah. And I mean, especially because it doesn't seem like Cobra even fights that much on her own anymore.
And it feels like Drago really hasn't been featured that much for a while, again, because he's a slave and stuff like that. So,
and I feel like Drago can't really fight at maximum potential because he's enthralled.
Agreed. So what you said that you liked this vignette and were embarrassed by it. So explain that.
I liked it because I liked everything that they were doing as far as Johnny Mundo dressed as Indiana Jones and them going into the Snake Temple, which I thought was great. What I did not like about this vignette, I'll just say one thing, but I feel that it represents everything that I didn't like about this vignette, and that would be the shaky cam reaction of Drago when the whole thing was over. It was a little too cheesy and a little too campy, and I feel like if I was introducing this show to somebody now, and that vignette was on it, and like we've been outlining it, you're right, the episode was a good episode. I think one of the best ones of the season. That's a tough sell.
That whole vignette
was a little too campy.
The one thing I will say about that, I think if that vignette was done a season or two earlier, it would have been perfect. They would have done it differently to where it would have been a scarier scene with still enough.
I think that's how you have to sell it.
Yeah. I agree. It was a little bit too much. And I think
the first time we even saw the Snake Throne Room.
And I think instead of the shaky cam, we probably would have gotten like Drago like breathing more fire, which I think is cool.
Which we've had, you know, I mean, we've had Drago do things like that.
Yeah, I don't know. So I totally get where you're coming from on that. Absolutely. But overall, what do you think about, I mean, as far as them cutting the head off of Vibra?
I mean, it was cool that they did it, but I feel it's one of those things that, all right, yeah, that's cool, but now what the heck are we going to do? Because we can't not have him. That's the ace in the hole for the Reptile Tribe. No offense to Aga.
I mean, maybe it's going to do a thing where they just sell that, like, you know, he can come back or whatever. I don't know. Maybe he just sheds his skin. I
don't think shedding skin helps regrow the head. Yeah. I was just watching Conan the Barbarian from 1982, and I saw Arnold Schwarzenegger pull a very similar stunt, and that snake was dead.
Yeah, that's true. Well, maybe
and
Cobra Moon,
Doom was really pissed.
Maybe Cobra Moon's going to use some of her powers to bring back Vibra then. I don't know.
I don't know. Thulsa Doom couldn't do it, and he's more powerful than Cobra Moon.
We don't know that.
Well, Cobra Moon, listen, she starts granting wishes, I'll give her a little bit more respect. Right now, I can't do it because the Reptile Tribe.
She's all talk right now.
Reptile Tribe doesn't do anything. I don't understand what they're all about.
I want more from them, though. I'm glad they went back to the Snake Temple and everything like that. And
they're a very cool tribe, and it's an incredibly cool concept.
Yeah.
So
I don't like the tribe name change, though. Snake Tribe is...
Yeah, well, and I mean, I hate the idea that they switched the name from White Rabbit Tribe to just Rabbit Tribe, but, you know, here we are.
Yeah, I'm not sure they did that one, though, but...
Well, they had to change it, because now they're all little black rabbits.
It's true. Little jack rabbits. But you said you had a question back when we were talking about the cast.
Oh, it was just... What exactly was their game plan going into the... in there? Like, okay, even if they were looking for Vibra, they didn't have the sword with them as they were going into the temple.
Well,
what were they going to do?
Well, I can answer that, actually. So their game plan was, because Mundo, after they incapacitated Vibra, said, all right, let's kneecap this, like, whatever, slimy turd cutter.
Gotcha.
And that's when Taya said, no, you said cut off the head of the snake, and she picked up the sword and decided to cut his head off instead.
Gotcha. Okay. I missed that part because I was probably closing my eyes from the cringe.
All right, fair. But again, I think throughout this conversation, I've talked to your ranking and your thoughts about this episode overall better than when we came in. So
where I said that I liked the episode, yes, I enjoyed it more than that. I'm trying to think of how the episodes have been going this season. Match-wise, this is definitely one of the best episodes. And then I guess like story progression wise, it was pretty decent too.
Yeah, we got the big Rick reveal. We got back.
Yeah,
to the
also that's another
tribe.
Thing. The Max reaction to seeing Big Rick's skull was very much just like the campiness of this vignette. There were a couple of parts here where I was like, "Oof, ooh." And I'm not saying that they're doing better acting in other wrestling productions. They most certainly are not. But yeah, it was some of it's painful to watch sometimes.
I was fine with Max's reaction.
He was very Troll 2-esque.
I had no issue with that.
They put Big Rick's skull in a locker, and now they're gonna do it to me.
Oh my god! Great knowledge. But I think that is going to do it for us this week here at Lucha Lowdown. Thanks for tuning in, believers. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.